on the move. This is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance.
This is Danny Glover, and I want you to listen to what I listen to, Hard Knock Radio.
This is Reuben Hurricane Carter. You're listening to Hard Knock Radio.
It started in slave ships.
Slave ships. There are more records of slave ships than one would dream. It seems inconceivable. Until you reflect that for 200 years, ships sailed carrying cargo and slaves.
Ran, non, non-violent. In the face of the violence that we've been experiencing for the past 400 years, is actually doing our people a disservice. In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums!
Now I get my teeth, so here's a song to the storm about the shake of the state and a smile when I'm
state of California, the police Bill of Rights. And out of that special relationship, you've got district attorneys, you've got prosecutors, you've got judges, all who enjoy a unique relationship in which they hope to keep and maintain their status quo relationship with law enforcement officials, not only here in Alameda County, but all over the state. That's right. When we heard this and we asked the DA why he had yet to bring charges against Johannes Mezeli, he said it was because police officers are given time to build up their defense. I asked him, Mr. Orloff, if I shot anybody on live videotape, would you allow me to go to Lake Tahoe and figure out how to build up my defense, or would you make me figure it out from behind bars? Well, now here we are, more than a year and a half later, where for the first time in state history, a police officer has been made to go to trial for the murder of a citizen in this state.
That's right.
With a country that's been reported to have had over 8,000 justifiable homicides where police have taken the lives of citizens. Over 8,000 from 1976 to 1996 have lost their lives at the hands of police. But the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, whom many were concerned about his teaching, declared, "We want justice." He said, we want equal justice under the law. He said that we want justice applied equally to all, regardless of creed or class or of color. Well, if I am caught on video murdering someone, then use the law as the law should be used in order to render justice. But what about you? Does the law apply equally to law enforcement officers? So when we heard some of the responses that the judge gave in Los Angeles to the motions made by Johannes Mezeli's attorney, be clear, his attorney is considered a superstar in what he does. He represents big money cases all over the area, and he's one of the best paid attorneys in the state. I'm talking about Michael Raines. He's a super attorney, according to those that need some legal representation. And that's why he's running so many games through the courtroom. But the question becomes, is the judge willing to judge this case with justice? Is the prosecutor willing to take those that he works with every day to task? When you hear motions being made that would allow police officers an opportunity to sit on a jury, you know better than that. Why would you allow any police officer to sit on a jury when every police officer's union was represented in an attempt to stop oversight of the BART police? And I was told by Assembly Member Tom Amiano that every police officer in the state were represented by union reps to reject police oversight of BART police. Therefore, not a single police officer in the state is qualified to sit on a jury for the murder of Oscar Grant. Everyone has a personal interest. Even the fact that Michael Raines brought the issue up. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad once said that when police officers shoot black men, that they'll go to court and thumb their nose at the process. And that they'll wink at the judge and say, yeah, I shot him. And they'll wink at the judge, and that the judge will wink back and say to that officer, I wish it had been me. I wonder whether or not we're looking at this kind of condition in the murder of Oscar Grant. So we're watching everybody in this case. We should know, as our sister said, America is on trial. Yes. The justice system is on trial. Yes. The defense attorney is on trial. Yes. And yes, the prosecutor is on trial. We want to make sure that Everybody that's in position to do the right thing is found doing the right thing. And if they're not found doing the right thing, then we need to replace them all with new persons and new systems in which to govern the land. May God bless and keep you as I leave you as I came before you. As-salamu alaykum.
Hi, Anita Talarka. I'm with BAM by any means necessary. And I really agree with what Brother Keith said earlier about the justice system, because what we're looking at and what we've got to get ready to do right now in Oakland in the Bay Area is we've got to get ready to fight a Jim Crow justice system. We're looking at a whitewash right now. We're looking at a DA right now who hasn't even set up their own expert witness when the defense attorney's already got four lined up. This is Jim Crow justice, but that's not Oakland. And I want to remind everyone here the kind of power and influence that we have, because the trial was moved out of this city because of what we accomplished, because of the movement that we built. Yeah. They didn't dare hold the trial here knowing that the truth of the murderer, of the racism, not just of Yohannes Mezrali, but of the BART police and of the Oakland police is just too well known, and there's too much resistance in the community to let that happen. We have succeeded in building a movement that has done what has never been done in the state of California before. We have thrown down the gauntlet and we have drawn the line in the sand. Oscar Grant's name will go down in history, whatever happens with this trial. Justice for Oscar Grant means justice for this young girl in Detroit.
That's right.
Justice for Oscar Grant means justice for the young man who was shot in Richmond. Justice for Oscar Grant means justice for the young men and women in New York City, in Chicago, in Los Angeles. And we need to recognize that the movement that has brought us to the point where, for the first time, a police officer is being held on trial for murder in this state is a trial and is history that the whole world is watching.
That's right, that's right.
We have to keep this movement going. Whatever we can do, whether or not any of us can go down to LA, we need to contact everyone that we can. We've got to organize everyone we can. We've got to get the truth out, because Jim Crow justice may dictate that Yohannes Mezrali's racist reputation and record won't be included in that courtroom. But guess what? There is the court of public opinion. And we control that. Every demonstration, every vigil like this, every coverage that we get influences the court of public opinion. And we need to remind the DA, we need to remind the judge, and we need to remind that jury that Oakland is watching. And we remember Rodney King. And we remember the last time justice was taken away from the hands of a community that had a right to decide what happened when racist cops beat and brutalized black people. And when LA burned, the justice system recognized that they better correct themselves, and they did the second time. Well, let's let them know that Oakland is watching now. They took our trial out of our community, but they will not take justice out of our hands.
Right.
Yohannes Mezrali is a racist murderer.
Right.
Kenneth Carruthers is already testifying to that. Other people already know. You do not hogtie a man. This is what Yohannes Mezrali did to Kenneth Carruthers. He beat him to the ground. He hogtied him. He lifted him up backwards in order to pull out and yank out his shoulder, and he shoved him into the back of a police car and took him to three different hospitals till he found one that was willing to cover up for his crime. Kenneth Carruthers is not afraid to tell the truth, but we've got to tell it for him too.
That's right.
The Oscar Grant family, the Johnsons, everybody, they're not afraid to tell the truth, but we can't leave it to them.
That's right.
We have to tell the truth too.
That's right.
We've got to carry this. this.
Jail the killer cops.
Huh. We gotta jail that killer cop.
Yeah.
And we gotta let that jury know. We gotta let them know that if they even try to take justice away from us, if they try to do that, Oakland's not that far from L.A. And L.A.'s not that far from Oakland. And the people of L.A., they identify with us. They've been through this. Rodney King is still alive, and his memory and his legacy and the legacy of the people of L.A. and the fight back that they made, the fight back that we made in Oakland after that decision, the fight back that people across the nation and the world made is still alive. And so when that jury casts that vote and when they deliberate, we need to make sure that while they're doing that, they're not just weighing what evidence was placed in front of them, because we know it's a Jim Crow justice already, right?
Yes.
We need to make sure in the back of their minds that they're remembering the smell of those burning buildings. We need to make sure that they remember what they could have prevented or what they can prevent in terms of any repetition of that. And I'm not advocating violence, but I'm a political person. And I know the truth. And I know that people will not take oppression, and people will not take being stamped down the way that Oscar was and the way that we are every day without an opportunity like this being taken, being passed us by. This is a chance for the jury system and for that jury to do the right thing. And while they're deciding whether they do the right thing, they got to know that they will be held responsible for what happens after that decision is cast. So let's make sure they remember that, and that they want to be and they want to go down as the people responsible for justice. For justice.
Right on.
That's our job.
All right.
Again, you are tuned to Hard Knock Radio. We just finished hearing two speakers at the Oscar Grant pretrial vigil held in Oakland yesterday at 8 p.m. in front of the district attorney's office in Oakland, California. Up next, we'll hear a poem read and written by a Youth Speaks poet. And later, we'll hear from organizers as well as protesters in San Francisco at the demonstration organized to protest Israel's killing on the Freedom Flotilla. Again, you're tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Warfield, keep that applause going. 19 years old, she's representing Chi-Town. Please give it up for Hadil Ramadan.
January 1st, 2009, 3 a.m. Swine flu flooded Fruitvale BART and cracked open the levees of an epidemic we have been fearing since before the sickness made kings perish into the nothingness that is past. As we carry their bodies wrapped in body bags strapped to the heat of a thousand suns, see, we don't want the sickness. Because these pigs are far more deadly than any swine, holding my breath each time I stroll across police stations, cover my ears at the sudden sound of sirens, see their song suckle on society like the stained lips of raped children to their wavering mother's breast. We nurtured them despite the fact that we see a shadow of our attacker's face in theirs as if the cure is unattainable. We continue to take and take. Allow these nothing more than common people to bear the flesh of the gods on their simple bones, packing heartbeats in their clips. See, this isn't on no overreacting liberal kids spitting left politics bullshit. This is us giving a grant to the policeman who had Oscar execution style on his knees. YouTube videos blaze from my monitor, making corpses resurrect from shallow graves. See, Oscar Grant relives his death with each viewing as I watch his back crack as if Gaza was in its arch and all I could remember was a photograph. I came across for the first time in high school of a Vietnamese man crouched on his knees like a beaten dragon surrendering to mortals. It took all the way until my senior year in high school for me to learn about Hiroshima and Nagasaki and that they are not just one of the easier genocides to talk about. For 12 grades of my education each year, the only massacre we were ever in-depthly introduced to was the Holocaust. Because in World War II, the U.S. fought against Germany and Japan, and in order to show the sinister ways of our adversaries, we brought one massacre to the light and went on to crumble the disintegration of Japanese citizens into the dust we have swept under our patriotic rugs, not realizing that the USA and Germany were only looking at a distorted reflection of each other. We continue to teach our children to be U.S. citizens before they are human beings. Only mourn your people and their allies, but disregard the flesh that lies on an enemy's bones. See, these borders are brainwashing. But the second time I saw this photograph, it broke me out of the trance, because the artist Banksy spray can had revolutionized it to depict the same man still as a beaten dragon, but no longer a pistol to skull. Instead, a bouquet of graffiti-encrusted roses emerging from his assassin's hand, a portrait worthy of bringing new life from ash, recreated insanity into humanity. And I have strived to do the same for Oscar Grant with this very poem, because we are the artists of the movement, are trying so hard to bring lost souls back to life, trying so hard to reshape history with our paint-stained fingertips, but I have learned to start working on right now. And so I will take these graffiti-encrusted roses and place them on the grave of the rape fetus our society finally decided to abort, because we are done nurturing the genes of our oppressors. We'll mold together each struggle I have come to know. Find Palestine in every foreign counterpart, working class, 9-to-5, barefooted, barely making ends meet fight. See, this is the only way peace can prevail, when the good do something to stop evil. From Oscar Grant to Herbert Tamiki, there is no shorter way home. And once we realize our pain is universal, that is when we can bring the orbit divinity back to the world, so our globe no longer has to rest on an axis of evil. Let the voice of our deceased demigods rumble through our vocal cords. My name is Oscar Grant. Don't shoot. My name is Herod Tamiki. Let me die. My name is Martin Luther. Immortalize my kingdom. My name is Che Guevara. Patria o muerte. My name is Anne Frank. Live through my words. My name is Edward Said. Take me home. My last name is Ramadan, and I am starving for your humanity. Thank you.
I'm living every day like a hustle, another drug and trouble, another day another struggle. I don't wanna live no
more. Adil Ramadan, please give it up as loud as you possibly can for Miss Ramadan one more time.
We are here to say that Zionism has no place in the international community. Zionism has no place in Palestine. And we are here to say that Zionism is racism. Israel is a racist state, and we will free Palestine. Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
David D. hanging out with you this afternoon. We are free, down here, Israeli consulate. We run into a good friend of ours.
Yes. Hi to everyone listening. My name is Pierre Labossière, and I'm a founding member of the Haiti Action Committee. Wanted to thank all of every brother and sister in the Bay Area and throughout the world for their solidarity with the people of Haiti.
We know you for doing work in Haiti, but what brings you out here today?
Yes, David, great to be here with you. And just outrage brings me out here. Very outraged at the fact that people who are bringing humanitarian supplies to people who are in need of food, medical supplies and water and things to sustain their lives, that those people could be so brutally attacked and killed because they are trying to help people in need. As you know, Haiti relies a lot on the solidarity of good people throughout the world, and to see good people being murdered like that on the high seas, there is no excuse for it. Regardless of how they try to portray this and make all kinds of excuses, there is no excuse. The whole world needs to rise up in strong condemnation. And I want to stand in solidarity with the people of Gaza, with the Palestinian people. They have a right to their state. They have a right to stand up on their own two feet as dignified human beings and live a life of dignity.
Now, Gaza was helping out Haiti when the earthquake came. Even though they had blockades and food, they were still trying to find out a way. So your thoughts on that and to see what's happening?
Precisely. And students, a group of students who had received a grant, actually wanted it to be turned over to the children of Haiti. And they actually did turn it over to the children of Haiti. So we feel a special bond of solidarity with the people of Gaza in that moment, and the Palestinian people, and all people struggling for justice.
You know, over the past few months, we've had everything from Tiger Woods scandals on down to numerous earthquakes in Chile and other places. We've had, of course, this situation and many others. And I bring that up because Haiti has almost been forgotten in terms of what's going on. And in this type of environment, we tend to think that, well, everything must be all right. You know, the problem's been resolved. So what is actually going on in Haiti? Is the situation improved? Are things dire? What's happening?
No, it's very dire in Haiti. And many of our brothers and sisters, as a matter of fact, just now I got a call from Haiti, where one of the camps was inundated with water because the rainy season has started. So the camp was inundated. And so people were calling me. They were calling me and telling me what the situation was. And so there is a lot of PR, a lot of public relations saying that things are getting to the people. But when you hear from the people themselves, the suffering is too much. It's so much that people are being driven into the streets in demonstrations almost on a daily basis now, calling for the resignation of the president of Préval, calling for the UN to be out of Haiti, and people on the streets of Haiti are calling for the return of President Aristide.
What happened with George Bush and President Clinton? I mean, there was a lot of fanfare. They were supposed to be doing a lot of work and humanitarian stuff and raising money, and there was a lot of hoopla. What have they been doing?
Well, when I ask people on the ground in Haiti, what about all of those monies that have been raised and all of that? They say, well, they probably raised a lot of money, but it's not filtering down to them. They are not seeing all of that money coming to them. The camps, some of the camps that they have built for them have been places that are completely out of the way, no transportation, none of the amenities, things to make life a little easier for people. So it's really disgusting what the situation is. But out here, outside of Haiti, abroad, we are fed the steady diet of everything is going excellently well. And it's not true, according to people on the ground in Haiti.
Lastly, you know, with the rainy season coming, what does that mean? Hurricane season and all that. And then complicating that, the oil, the Gulf oil, does that affect Haiti at all or what?
You know, with the rainy season, things are going based on the call that I just got saying how people were inundated in one of the camps. It's just terrible. So people are very, and we haven't seen anything that's being on a massive scale preparing for the hurricane season that's coming. So, and in Haiti right now, there is a lot of talk about oil being found in Haiti. And there is a lot of talk among the population that some companies want to exploit this oil.
Exxon has their thing going on in Nigeria right now.
That's right.
And
that's
so,
right.
You know, so we have that. And then we have this thing with the Gulf, with the Gulf states.
Yep.
But will that spill eventually make its way to Haitian shores?
You know, the way that they are not capping it, Haiti's in the Caribbean. So the world is connected. Who knows? If this thing keeps on going the way it's going, so many countries will be affected and devastated by it. That's a big fear. And it seems like it's out of control, the way they are not capping that.
Well, we've been talking with Pierre Lavoisier from the Haitian Action Committee. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. We are down here, still at the Israeli consulate, talking to a number of people. What's your name, brother?
Phil Lawson.
You're just getting back from Arizona.
Arizona, yes.
You went down there to deal with SB 1070.
Yes.
Is it kind of ironic to just come from Arizona to a protest like this today?
Well, it's not necessarily ironic. They are related in very much the same way. At the bottom of the immigration issue is a lie, a major lie, and that lie is that brown people and black people are not as valuable as white people. No legislator would make a law like 1070 and ask to check British-looking people for their documentation. It's because the people are brown that they passed this law. The same lie is at the core of the Palestinian-Israel issue. The Palestinian are people of color, basically. Israel is identified with the white community. In fact, many Israelis consider themselves white. So it's the same lie. The Palestinians are not as important as the Israelis.
You know, we're here, and we've been looking at a small number of people, but we noticed that some of the signs are pretty racist themselves. One sign is talking about get rid of Islam, and the other one is talking about, you know, once Gaza, the job won't be done until Gaza's gone. What do you think about that, and how can this happen from people that we, as a country, are supposed to be supporting with our tax dollars?
Back in the 60s, James Baldwin says that black people's difficulty with Jewish people is that they think they are white. I quoted that one day to a rabbi here in the Bay Area, and he said to me, Reverend Lawson, we are white. And I said to him, Rabbi, you're Jewish, not white. Your identification should be Jewish, not white. So your racist signs that you see are a reflection of the fact that many Jewish people consider themselves white, identify with whiteness.
What do you think the African-American community should be doing? What do you talk to your congregation about when it comes to issues like this? And what do you talk to your congregation about when it comes to these types of issues?
That we must not be silent. We must speak up and let our voices be heard. And the one thing unites us is people who are suffering with other suffering people. And coincidentally, or maybe not coincidentally, those suffering people are people of color.
What's the next step from here? You know, both in terms of what you've been doing in the immigration front and also what we're doing here now.
Every individual, I think, has to start up their resistance and intensify their resistance to the racism and the violence inflicted upon people of color by immigration laws and by what Israel is doing to the Palestinians. We must resist, resist, resist.
And then lastly, I just want to ask you about the trip down to Arizona. A lot of y'all ministers came together working with the Latino community and sharing with them the experiences that y'all had with the Freedom Summers and all that. What were those conversations like, and what were some of the key points that you shared with people and that you got from them?
I spoke of the fact that my paternal grandfather escaped from slavery, went to Canada, then came back. My father then was born there, came back. In the same sense, many blacks escaped from slavery, went to Mexico. Mexico welcomed them. And so I went to Arizona recognizing those were my family members, sisters and brothers. We go back a long ways. And so I went in solidarity with them.
That's real talk right there. Well, we appreciate it, Reverend Lawson.
Well, thank you for asking me.
We are down here still at the Israeli consulate. Lots of people out here protesting what is taking place over the weekend. We got a couple of gentlemen here. What's your name?
Gerald Lenoir.
What brings you out here, and what organization are you with?
I'm with the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, and I'm out here because the Israelis once again have committed a gross atrocity against innocent civilians.
You know, you just got back from Arizona, where they were protesting 100,000 strong, you know, for SB 1070. Many people have compared the type of laws that they have there with what is going on in Israel. From your standpoint, how are you seeing it?
I absolutely agree. If you look at the politics of this country in terms of building the wall across the border, in terms of sending out races of people, it's the same kind of policy that we see in Israel, an apartheid state that is segregating people according to their race, according to their nationality. It's the same kind of brutal, vicious policies that are causing people's lives.
Have you been to Palestine? I know you were talking about bringing a trip of people out there. You wanted to bring a black delegation. And how important is it for African Americans to align themselves and to go out to Palestine themselves?
It's critically important. I'm also on the board of a group called Interfaith Peace Builders. And 2 years ago, I did go to the West Bank and saw for my own eyes and talked to people on the ground who are suffering under the apartheid system there. And we as African Americans need to understand what's going on in the world. We have the ability to impact foreign policy in this country if we align with other people in this country that are oppressed as we are. And so we need to look at what's going on in Israel, because the whole issue of terrorism in the world and why people in the Middle East, many people in the Middle East, dislike the America so intensely is because we have been supporting Israel for so long and creating a situation where Palestinians are the largest diaspora of any group in the world. They've been driven from their homeland, and they continue to be oppressed by a minority government.
I asked you that question for a couple of reasons. One, you look like you're old enough to have remembered a few things. Amongst them would be, as you talked about earlier, the fact that that they were making the connection between the Freedom Summers of 64 and 65 and what have you in Arizona. During those Freedom Summers, we had a lot of support as African Americans fighting Jim Crow with a lot of people from the Jewish community. Where did we get this split all of a sudden that, you know, that you have, you know, this group of people that's across there supporting what has taken place, these horrific crimes, a group of people aligning themselves with apartheid South Africa? How is it that we were walking hand in hand on one minute and then it seems to be on the wrong side of history the next?
It's an incredible switch to see a people who were so oppressed. 6 million Jews died in the Holocaust, and for them to come back around and oppress another group of people, it's an incredible switch. And they justify it on biblical grounds, just like the folks who enslaved us justified it on biblical grounds, just like the Boers in South Africa justified it on biblical grounds. And so you see the same kind of rhetoric going on in Israel that you have in other settler states and in our own situation here in the U.S. It's an incredible flip for people who stood by us when we were fighting the civil rights, but then they turned around after the civil rights struggle was over and opposed affirmative action. And so we see this duality in the Jewish community.
Have we gotten ourselves straight? Because a lot of African Americans still will not cross certain lines, won't even address this issue because of support. We've seen that there's been penalties paid with AIPAC coming after people like Cynthia McKinney and others who dare side with Palestinians. How do we deal with that sort of scenario?
Well, I think at the grassroots is where we have to be in educating our folks and going into our communities and educating our folks about what's really going on in Palestine. That's one of the reasons why I want to bring a black delegation to Palestine and see for yourself what's going on the ground. Because if you go there and see, you will understand very clearly what's going on, because it's all out in the open. It's a police state. The West Bank is a police state. The so-called, supposed to be an independent state for the Palestinians and Gaza. Gaza is a prison, and the West Bank is a police state. So the more people we can take over there, African Americans, to see what's going on, to come back and talk to our communities, the more we can break the grip of the Zionist lobby here in the United States.
Well, there you have it. We're going to take a break. We're going to go see what they're talking about here on the stages and come back and talk with some other people.
I know there's another side that expresses the real view of the Israeli government. And that is, it says, until all of Gaza is destroyed, the job will not be done. You hear that? That's the real view of the state of Israel, except it needs one little amendment. What they really mean is that the job will not be done until all the Palestinians are destroyed. That's what Israel really wants. But are they going to succeed? No way. They have counted the Palestinians out many times. They have used the most extreme brutality against the Palestinian people to the extent that it is no exaggeration to say this. Israel is a state based on massacres. It could not exist without massacres. Over and over and over again, the massacres of the Palestinians and those who support the Palestinian people. Israel is a terrorist state. But we must say this too, that what Israel does, it could not do without the economic, the military, the diplomatic support of the United States of America. And the lies don't just come from Tel Aviv, they come from Washington. Today, Hillary Clinton said She wants to see a real investigation, a fair investigation, conducted by Israel.
Boo! Down with Hillary Clinton.
So the criminal is being asked to carry out the investigation of itself. We are here today together with people all over the world who are marching in the streets. We will be marching again on Saturday. At 11 a.m., we will be gathering at the Civic Center for a national day of action. We want an end to the siege of Gaza. We want justice for our sisters and brothers who have been victimized on this flotilla. We want justice for the Palestinian people. We want the right of return for the Palestinian people. We want an end to racism of all forms, including Zionism. Stop U.S. aid to Israel.
Davey D. hanging out with you this afternoon. We are down here, San Francisco, California, in front of the Israeli consulate. A lot of people out here very upset about what took place this past weekend, where something like 15 people were killed in a horrific attack by the Israeli Defense Army. We have somebody here. What's your name?
Iyad Keshawi.
Tell everybody why you all are out here today and how grave is this situation.
Well, we are here to really underscore the horror that the Israelis committed against a group of unarmed activists who are basically human rights activists. They were carrying aid to Gaza that has been under siege since 2007, basically turning 1.5 million people into prisoners in a very large open-air prison with extremely devastating conditions. And the international community tried to respond by having civilians go and break the siege on Gaza. And after multiple provocations by the Israeli government, they finally attacked the last flotilla, opening fire and killing 19 people, injuring 50.
There were a number of people who, and I mean, everybody's important, but you had Nobel laureates and people like that. Any of the people that we may be familiar that you have been able to confirm dead? And also, we are here in the Bay Area, so what's the fate of the people who are from the Bay that were on those boats?
Israel is refusing to release the names of the dead so far. And we think there might be a public relations crisis for them, and that's why they are refusing to release the names of the dead. We know that Paul LaRudy from the International Solidarity Movement, he's a local activist who works regularly with us here, has been savagely beaten. And all we know is that he's been kept in a cell along with the captain of the ship, who was also wounded by the Israeli commandos.
What do you think of President Obama's response? Netanyahu was supposed to meet with him. He canceled the meeting. We did hear the president say that he wanted some facts and figures. Is that good enough, or are you looking for more?
We are really disappointed with President Obama. His policy on Israeli crimes has not been very different than that of George Bush. What one could say is that President Obama is providing more cover for Israel to continue committing the crimes that it's doing and isolating and putting the Palestinian people under siege. And what we are calling the international community to do right now is to take to the streets and mobilize at the grassroots level. For example, we're calling for people to join the international community in condemning these actions. We're also calling for people to escalate on boycott, divestment, and sanctions to really isolate Israel for this criminal act. We're calling on local municipalities, cities, labor unions, everybody to pass resolutions condemning these barbaric acts of piracy. And finally, we want the international court to truly investigate Israeli crimes, starting from the attack on Lebanon, to the attack in Gaza, to the attack on the flotilla, and reevaluate Israeli membership in the United Nations.
You know, in the past, over the years, we've seen right-wing extremists here in the United States talk about hating a number of people who they would consider minorities, blacks, browns, and Jews. And they were pretty strident about it. The Klan and some of those other white supremacist organizations have been very clear. But in recent days, we've seen them actually siding with Israel, which is a strange thing. Some of these fundamentalist Christians seem to take up and want to ride for Israel. What is that about, and where is that coming from?
You know, actually, there is no confusion about that. If you look at the ideology of the KKK or the neo-Nazis, they are exclusionary movements. If you look at the ideology of right-wing fundamentalist Christians who have called for an exclusionary U.S. state, it is natural for them to ally themselves with an exclusionary Israeli state. They may be anti-Semitic by nature, they may even hate Jews, but the fact is that exclusionary movements tend to attract each other. And so it is very natural to see right-wing movements of all kinds of ethnicities and permutations support the state of Israel.
And then lastly, what's the next steps from here? I mean, I know you've outlined some of the things that you hope to see in terms of the UN and things like that. But what can people that are listening right now, what would be the marching orders that you give to them?
There are two things that we're asking people to do. Go back to their unions, go back to their municipalities, go back to their city councils, and ask for an immediate condemnation of the horrific act that took place as an act of piracy on the high seas. These condemnations, or these resolutions, should call on President Obama to immediately lift the siege off of Gaza.
And one other thing that just came to mind, when I attended the hearings, the divestment hearings at UC Berkeley, we heard about these underhanded tactics and threats that people who were pro-Israeli were putting, threatening the student senators, for example, with maybe having their vote be with them for the rest of their lives, and then, you know, there would be some sort of payback, maybe economically or academically. What should one do when you have this type of aggression being put out for people just expressing their opinion on something?
These are simple acts of thuggery. Those who are in power and who don't want to give up power in the face of the justice movement always employ them, especially when they're losing. And we're truly seeing a clear shift in the balance of powers globally today, where people have voted for justice and are taking a position against an apartheid state called the State of Israel.
We appreciate that. And your name one more time?
Iyad Keshawi.
Thank you. Thank you very much, brother.
Give the power back to the people.
Yeah!
Give the power back to the people.
Hell yeah!
Give the power back to the people. 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 Give the power back to the people.
Trying to live my funky life. Why you wanna fuck with me? TV got me like poltergeist in a radio poison frequency. News reporters always distort us. This sophomore year of the new world order, racism still exists. Gangland warfare in this bitch. Bombing countries, selling dope. Weapons with scopes that kill your hope. Suicidal on they rival, and then they go tribal just for survival. Terrorism, capitalism, dressed up political activism. One more strike and it's back in prison. That leaves me with one decision.
Back to the people, we gonna love, we gonna rise, we gonna shine.
Patrol my block, predators out and he's on the clock. Flashing lights are telling me to stop. Social profiling, filthy cop. Congressman, an honest man. Dirty politician and a campaign plan. How
to fight crime and drug addiction while they're giving out time on the guilt conviction. District attorney and you're a Tony and a judge and a man on the illest journey. Pack the jails, won't take the doors, incite the riots, attack the poor. The big machine, the little device, the innocent people that paid the price. Wanna violate my human rights, I can't let you control my life.
We're giving the power back to the people. We don't run.
So there you have it. Hopefully you got some food for thought the way you like it. Hard Knock Radio, Davey D saying we're over and out. See you tomorrow.